and welcome back. It's another episode of Inside Boxing. We're presented by PPV.com in unison with Yahoo Sports and on Crown. May 2nd, Zerto and our guy Benavidez step into the ring live on PPV.com. Stream it to your big screen TV, your tablet, your phone, everything. We'll have a live interactive chat that will be part of Fight Week coverage. That is our next big one over on PPV.com. Go follow PPV.com. Go like and subscribe us on YouTube and everywhere else so we can get more eyeballs on this very, very wonderful podcast that we deliver to you twice a week. With that being said, how are you, Chris Algieri?
I'm good, man. It's very much Sunday morning. I got my cup of Joe, chatting with you, talking all things boxing. But I'm good, man. A little tired week. This morning, not going to lie.
Yeah, it was a long week. I was in New York City for the MVP all week long. They had us doing all sorts of stuff Tuesday through Friday night. A late start, 10 p.m.
Oh, dude, I'm not built to be up late anymore, man. It's killing me. When that show started at 10 p.m. and there was four fights, I was like, oh no. I'm not gonna lie, I fell asleep. I didn't even get to watch Baumgartner. I saw
1:15 in the morning. Nah. It was the 10th round. Oof. 10th round, 1:15. That's not an MVP thing. That's an ESPN right. thing. You remember when Top Rank was on ESPN? They were like, why are we getting the 10 p.m. slot? Why are we coming on after UFC? Why are we coming on after women's softball? Why are we coming on after bull riding? It's just what ESPN wants to do. And they gave I'm happy to see boxing back on ESPN. Very grateful. And I know that boxing fans are as well. But that was a tough time slot. The co-main event and main event were both really good. We'll get to that in a second. Baumgartner wins. Lonnie Daniels upsets Shadeja Green to become unified and ring champion at 168. The smiling assassin. So that's where we were all week long. It was a busy week of doing content and covering the MVP stuff. There was Ben Whitaker got a big win on Saturday. I want to start there because Ben Whitaker, what is he? What is Ben Whitaker? He's approaching 29 years old. He's an Olympian, another washout type of win. He's now with Matchroom. We hear great things. This guy can one day sell out Wembley. The competition has just not been there. The buzz has been there, but it's starting to wane because it's like, when is this guy going to actually fight someone up to his standard or his skill level?
Expectation, really. I mean, yeah, I like Ben. And when you ask what is he, he's entertaining. You know, I'll give him that. He talks the talk. You know, his style is very, very pleasing to see. It looks like he's got some pop and some power. Super brash. He's got that charisma to him. He could be one of those guys. I mean, he has star potential, no question. But yeah, to your point, Dan, we got to put him in there with somebody who has a pulse. This fight was not it. And this was, listen, if Ben was the original main event of this card, it wouldn't have been Suarez. I'll tell you that right now. That this was a showcase fight to look great before an awesome main event of David Morrell and Callum Smith, which I really, really liked that fight. It's a shame that it fell out. But yeah, that was supposed to be a showcase, the first round knockout, the way it was before a great main event. But the main event falls out, and that happens in boxing. And this fight got elevated into that number one slot. But yeah, Eddie was talking about this a lot all week, you know, and there was a lot of coverage on where Ben can be, you know. But I don't know, man. It's hard to put so much stock into somebody that you haven't really seen tested.
Yeah, he knocks out Brian Suarez in 2 minutes and 30 seconds. Was not much of anything. You know, Suarez was an opponent that his claim to fame was giving Lyndon Arthur a tough go. But
also got stopped by Lyndon Arthur, who's not a puncher.
So that's how they were kind of justifying this fight. All right, this guy gave Lyndon Arthur rounds in 2023. He's not ranked anywhere. Another thing, too, is that Whitaker, this fight was at 182 pounds.
I saw that.
I scoured the internet. I asked some people over in the UK. I was waiting to get back an answer on why this was the weight. I understand that it came together late. I maybe can piece together that, but you would think if we're trying to take this guy seriously, because I do think he has the goods. I do think he's very good. And light heavyweight is ripe for the taking with a lot of the older statesmen, looking to get out of sports soon, Bivol and Beterbiev. But you would think, like, okay, he would come in at 175. Like, let's just go through, like, a normal fight week as if you were fighting for some type of championship, because that's the type of level you are. But I see 182 pounds, And I'm like, so once again, adds to the confusion around Ben Whitaker.
Yeah, I'm going to assume that it was on the Suarez side about why they came in over the weight. If you look at Suarez's last three bouts, they were all over 180 pounds. So there's that. Also, like you said, it was a bit of a, he was a last minute guy, so maybe just he couldn't get down to the weight and they just kind of reconfigured the deal. But yeah, that was interesting. But listen, Ben looked good on the scale at 182. He still looked stripped and ready and ripped, man. So I wonder if getting those extra 7-8 pounds off actually might bother him. I don't know. But he looked great physically, and obviously he looked great in terms of the way he performed. But yeah, but this guy, I mean, he had been stopped three times before. You know, we mentioned the Lyndon Arthur fight. You know, he's been stopped in the first round in Argentina. Like this had the writings of a complete washout, and it's exactly what it was.
Well, he did what he was supposed to do. We talk about this all the time. Like we expect, yeah, you know, if he would have went in there and struggled, we would have opened up this show talking about this guy's a fraud, Ben Whitaker, you know, especially with the Liam Cameron fiasco. But he did exactly what he was supposed to do. He was supposed to be the co-main event. He was supposed to be a showcase. He was supposed to come in and do exactly that. But now this, we're looking at a four-year career of a lot of these types of fights where I think the fans are just like, okay, yes, he can get these guys out of here. He has the showboating, which he hasn't done in a while, which I'm glad.
I don't think he's going to be able to do that at the higher
level. I'm happy he's not doing it. Even if he was capable of doing it over these guys, just stop.
He was pissing off a lot of people. I remember that a couple months back. Even before the Liam Cameron fight, I remember being, you know, and I agree with it because he was just taking advantage of people that were nowhere near his level. If you can do that to your contemporaries, like the way Nazim Hamed did, then yeah, I get it. But when you're just doing it to guys just because you can, and they're just nowhere near your level, you're fighting a guy with 11 losses and you're clowning him, it's not really a good look.
No, that was a bad look. But the fans could see. It's like, all right, another blowout. Like, we're hearing about Whitaker. Is he going to one day take the throne from AJ in terms of ticket sellers in the UK? You know, he does have the silver medal. But then another blowout, and you're just like, even if you're a fan of his, you're sitting there questioning what exactly this guy could do and when he can do it and what's the timeline. And that's what Eddie Hearn offered after the fight, is a plan to have so Whitaker will fight on the Zayas Boots card, which I think is a really, really good move. Get him some of that U.S. exposure, get in front of the media here in New York. Who he's going to fight remains to be seen. I personally think it should be Jesse Hart. Jesse Hart fought Khalil Coe. Khalil Coe got the decision, but I thought Jesse Hart won that fight. Khalil Coe came in about 7 or 8 pounds overweight. Wouldn't want to see him get rewarded with that type of exposure and that type of payday. I want to see Jesse Hart. Give me Ben Whitaker versus Jesse Hart. And then in December, Eddie said he's going to come back to the UK in a domestic type of fight. And for that one, can be a Willie Hutchinson type. So you give me, for Ben Whitaker, you give me Jesse Hart in the U.S., then you give me Willie Hutchinson in December. All right, now we got something. Now we got a plan. Then you go full throttle 2027 towards the title.
I would be surprised if it was Jesse Hart, because Jesse Hart can be a stinker. And you can make a guy like Ben look bad. He's tall, he's name, long, though. He's awkward. You know what I think they could use and could do? Manuel Gallegos. I think he'd be a perfect guy. Yeah. For Ben Whitaker for the comeback in the States. You got a Mexican who comes forward and bangs. And he touched you. He's the one who had the fight of the year with Najee Lopez. He beat Khalil Coe, and then Khalil Coe came back to knock him out. I think that's a perfect fight because he's the kind of guy that is rough. He's tough. He'll push you if you don't push him off you, he's going to push through you. He's going to be resistance. And if he goes out there and busts him up the way that I expect him to, it's going to be a good look because the guy was in a fight of the year with Najee Lopez. He actually beat Khalil Coe. So that kind of name on a Ben Whitaker's resume right now.
I like that.
Real pretty.
I like that. Like styles make fights. Chris Algieri, the matchmaker here. Like Najee Lopez, I believe is too risky.
Too much.
And he's got his sights set on other fights at 175. But that type of fighter, like, you know, Khalil Coe, who was just super frustrating with his performance against Jesse Hart, and then also just blowing past the weight and doing it numerous times. His name has popped up numerous times. I believe he's on his last fight with Matchroom, so that could be a perfect guy there. But Hart, you know, is from Philly. It's a fight in D.C. Philly with boots on the main event. They could sell some tickets there. You got that going for it. But you're right, though, in terms of style, Gallegos, who is going to bring, who's going to come forward and be almost tailor-made for Whitaker. I just want rounds from this guy. I just want to see what he's fully capable of, because we talk about this all the time on the show. It's just like, we're not specifically fans of certain fighters. We're fans of the entire sport. We want the sport to thrive. And with AJ getting older, with Fury on his getting older, they got two or three fights left. You know, Conor Benn is not a ticket seller in the U.S., in the U.K. It's important that the U.K. has a star. And it's very clear that Matchroom, this is who they think is next. This is who they're tabbing is next. Being 28 years old and having the amateur background and being a lightning rod, it's good for boxing if Ben Whitaker becomes a pound-for-pound great in the sport.
I agree. I 100% agree, because he has all the things that I said from the top. You know, he's got all the makings of that superstar person and the superstar qualities. So I think Matchroom is being smart. I think Eddie's being smart with the way that they're moving him after this fight. Because like I said, this was just a bad timing fight, because this was not supposed to be a main event. I think I got a lot more attention than it should have. Yeah, he's going to blow this guy out in the first round. He was going to do that either way. But now there's got a lot more attention on him because he was the main event. But Eddie, I think originally I heard Eddie say five more fights and then he's ready for the world. I might have misheard that, because now he said last I heard it was three. He said three more fights, like you had walked us through. I'm okay with that, but I like that he's coming back right away. So he's got that fight on the boots undercard. Then he gets one more this year. So we're talking 2027. Excuse me. This guy is in big-time fights, like legit world-class, world-title fights. I don't know if that's actually going to happen, though. I don't know. It seems like a quick turnaround, because this fight like didn't even count. Like this showed us nothing. So nothing. The next fight has got to be really – it's got to be a legitimate step up.
Well, I think a Hart Gallegos type
in the U.S. Those are big step-ups, Dan. Like
it has to happen, because if you're putting it on the Zayas Boots card, that's a pay-per-view here. And I will say the quality of pay-per-views have gotten better on DAZN and over the last couple of years. So you can't just put another blowout in the U.S. with some guy we never heard of on a massive card like that. Are they going to make it the co-main event? Is Ben Whitaker going to be the co-main event to Zayas and Boots? Or is he going to be first fight of the night? Because if it's first fight of the night, you can get away with that. If it's co-main event, then you know you really have to find a guy that's going to push Whitaker and give him rounds.
Yeah, and we can't forget about the last push that Whitaker got in the Liam Cameron fight. And I remember when that fight was
pushed right out of the ring.
Yeah, I remember when that fight was announced, and I was looking at the records and I was going over where Ben Whitaker had been. I'm like, this is a step up, and I think this might be a step up to a little too soon. And sure enough, we saw the resistance that Liam gave Ben in those first couple rounds, and I was like, whoa. And then again, it looked like he was looking for a way out. The Ben Whitaker moniker on Twitter is just brutal. I mean,
Ben Whitaker.
That's crazy. That came real quick. The internet is undefeated. You people are bloodthirsty. But then he comes back and he did what he was supposed to do when he had the rematch. But yeah, he's gonna need a big step up. But I'm sure Eddie and Matchroom is like, we got to be a big step up, but also we got to be careful with this guy. If they have a Lyndon Arthur type, I mean a Liam Cameron type performance again on this undercard. Yeah, I do too. But again, if that's gotta wear on Eddie's mind though. I'm like, this guy could totally ruin everything with this.
They like the UK boxing scene right now is definitely in a transition, and Matchroom has done an unbelievable job of finding over the years. They haven't done it in a while. No one has come along since AJ, and you would think like they would have had a guy in place already that could sell tickets and could do that. And once again, it's not Conor Benn. He's not even with Matchroom anymore. He just signed an extension with Zuffa. So like you would think Matchroom would have had a guy the last like 5 years, while Joshua had already reached his peak and was starting to come down. He was now 36. So when Joshua like hit 30, 31, you know, if everything was perfect for Matchroom, they would have had a Ben Whitaker type coming up the pipeline, fighting underneath Joshua on those cards. And then it's a smooth transition. But boxing is not like that. You know, there isn't like some schedule where everything works out perfectly. But they've invested in Whitaker. They got him from Boxer. And now we're going to see this plan. And one thing about Eddie, You got to give him credit, man. This guy, they know what they're doing over there at Matcham. They know how to make stars in the UK.
No question.
You see something here, and they're going to take it somewhat slow, but I think this is it. Like, this type of fight, I think he got the win, but it almost, like, pissed people off more than anything else. It got to, you know what I mean? It's, like, so weird in the sport. It's got to the point where, like, oh, great. He just blew out, just knocked out another guy that had a no-hoper. Now we have the same exact conversations about
poor kid can't win.
he can't
catch a break. People are brutal, man. It really, really is tough to.
Well, you have Eddie next to you. You're standing there, and you showboat against cab drivers. And then you fall out of the ring and you go in a wheelchair and you call Ben Quaid. Like, this guy's had a tumultuous career to start. So it comes with the territory, because what it could be is the king of UK boxing and taking that mantle and being a very, very rich and being in the forefront of everything over there. So I get it. Yeah, we're going to ridicule the hell out of this guy on the way up.
Yeah, I'm looking at his record right now, his last three fights. I mean, he hasn't seen a round three. And he's dominating guys. And these guys had good records. You know, one of them was the rematch with Liam Cameron that he stopped him in the second round. Then he fights a 19-1 guy, stops him in one round. Then he fights, you know, Suarez, stops him in a round. So, yeah, it's one thing to be blowing people out and staying busy. But I think there's just too much attention on this guy that he's going to be under the microscope and people are going to be looking into his opponents. You cannot just have blowouts. You've got to be able to be stepping up and progressing forward, because there's a long way to go before he's a star in the UK and taking the mantle away from a guy like AJ. So, yeah, Matchroom's in a tough little predicament here. But also, do we see Matchroom being like sink or swim, or are they going to have to coddle him? I don't know. They're not like Top Rank, because Top Rank throws you out there. If you're going to be the guy, you're going to figure it out and you're going to fight. And if you lose, then okay, we move on. But I don't think Eddie can do that. I don't think Matchroom can do that with Ben.
This could be a moot point, because Moses Atama seems like he's going to take that mantle.
He doesn't have the personality.
He does a little. In the last episode, the last fight he had, he kind of was a little more out there.
Yeah, he came out in the post-fight press conference. Was good.
I love that. I love he said, like, he didn't think he'd get a knockout like that, but he was so happy that he got it the way he did. He was actually surprised, and he was just like, that's what I wanted to do. Like, more talk about that, not like, oh, I go in there and I try to get the knockout and I try to do that. He was pretty forthcoming about that. But you're right, like, Whitaker's got the people are going to tune in to watch him lose. He's a lightning rod, whereas Atama's very, very quiet and very reserved and very classy type of guy. Where I don't know if he's going to have a lot of enemies. Atama, the only enemies he might have are guys that's like, they just don't think he's that good. They're not going to dislike him for anything he's going to say in there. Where Whitaker can be a little bit of a lightning rod and kind of flashy.
Did you see what Whitaker said about, because the David Morrell falls out, right? The fight falls out because of Callum Smith, not David Morrell. David Morrell was still ready to fight. He called out Ben Whitaker himself, which I think was a smart move on David Morrell's part, because one, I mean, there's no way they were going to put him in with David Morrell now. But still, I think that kept him relevant, kept him, you know, I'm in shape. I want to be here. I want to fight anybody. And David Morrell will fight anybody. And, you know, he throws out Ben Whitaker. You see Ben's response. I thought it was classy. He sat down. He goes, yeah, you know he threw a little barb. He's like, yeah, maybe he needs money. You know, throwing that out. He's like, no, we talked to Eddie and our team. And like he gave respect to Morrell. It's like, that's not really, you know, where we're going right now. You know, we got a little more building to go. He's like, but in three fights, I'm ready for anybody in the world, including that kind of guy. So I thought he handled that properly. Threw a little barb, but also gave some respect. But at the same time, 28-year-old Olympian, you got Dave Morrell, who's the same age and has fought for world titles already and has been a world champion already and fought David Benavidez.
Dude, I can get if he was like, you know, like Fabio Wardley didn't have a amateur career, really. He had a few white-collar fights. That I understand moving someone like that slowly. Olympian? Like, we've seen, like, Lomachenko come in and fight for a world title in his second fight. Not saying he's on the level of Lomachenko, but when you have that Olympian next to your name, and it follows you your whole career. Like, that's Andre Ward, Olympian. Sugar Ray Leonard. It's something that goes along with your career, and it's such an unbelievable distinction to have.
Even on Pro Box, we got that Brazilian gold medalist, Heber Conceição. He's been in tough already. He's got like 10 fights. I think he's 11-0. He's 11-0 with 5 knockouts. But he's been in super tough.
Like, are we putting too much emphasis on being an Olympian? Like,
no, I don't think so.
Silver medalist, too. So he was in the gold medal of match, Whitaker.
Yeah.
Yeah, because we see guys that can make a team from a country that doesn't have a big pool and they're Olympians. So there's different levels. I get that. But to make it to the finals and take home silver, you should be, you would think conventional wisdom would say, all right, we're going to move this guy quicker. Like, not warp speed, which is Lomachenko, but not slow, like would be a guy that, you know, just has skills and entered the sport late.
Yeah, I don't think that we are overemphasizing how important an amateur record is and what being an Olympian is. I think in most cases, it's not brought up enough and it's not recognized enough. This is odd because he does have the goods. He has the pedigree and he's still being moved slowly. It makes me think, like, what are they seeing in the gym? What is the issue?
Someone is offering resistance here.
Yes, yes. Is it Ben himself? Is it his manager? Is it his coaches? They're not, you know, because we see guys that are willing to just take crazy risks. Xander Zayas, for example, you see a kid like him who's willing to take anybody on, is calling out the boogeymen in the divisions. And I remember being around him and his team, and it's just like they all have supreme confidence in their guy. So is there a trepidation amongst the team that is causing this slow progression? I don't know, man. It's really interesting.
It could be the fact that they like the business side of the sport, where maybe he isn't as good as he could, like people think he could be in terms of being a pound for pound type of guy.
But if that's the case, he's never going to be. If he's not good enough, if he's not that good, he's not going to be that good. He's 28.
To coincide, like even with Joshua, we've used this example before. Like there was a point where he was the best heavyweight in the world, and he was also the biggest ticket seller in potentially in all of boxing. I mean, no one else was doing 80,000 in 2017, 2018, but it coincided with him being the best heavyweight at the time. This was before he lost to Ruiz and the shine came off a little bit. So it does have to reach the same point where your skills match the hype in the business side, because they can say, Eddie and us can say, oh, this guy could potentially be the face of UK boxing. But if he doesn't even win, he's not. You know, that's the beauty of boxing. You step into that ring, we're going to figure out exactly who you are. So I'm excited to see what he can do in June. I'm excited to maybe talk with him and interview him and see what he's all about, his personality and all that. Hopefully it's a fight, like you said, a Gallegos type, a Jesse Hart, a Khalil Coe, of that ilk. And then Willie Hutchinson is asking for that fight in the UK
in the
end of the year.
That's a tough
fight. Defeated Craig Richards and only has two losses. One of them is a split decision loss to Buatsi.
That's a really tough fight. I think even a Richardson fight is that's tough, man. But yeah, Hutchinson. I'm sorry, Richards. Excuse me. But yeah, that's if he went Gallegos or slash Kevin Hart, and then to a
Jesse Hart.
Jesse Hart, excuse me.
He should fight Kevin Hart, the comedian. That'd be sick. Squash him into the ground.
God, they want to get some. It is Sunday, boy. Kevin Hart.
You want to get some buzz? Beat the shit out of Kevin Hart.
That's some way to come to the States, huh? Come over and beat up one of our biggest comedians.
Then I believe in him. Then he's definitely headlining Wembley after that.
That's great. But if he does a Gallego / Jesse Hart fight in on the undercard of Boots, and then he goes into Willie Hutchinson fight, that's like you're really
almost
ready.
Has to, dude.
You're right. He's, at that point, you're ready for world titles because that's a hell of a run.
Yeah, he almost has to at this point. He's got Eddie in the ring with him, and it's got to the point, like you said, like we can't win anymore with these blowouts, and we want him to, you know, people say Benavidez would clock him, and the Bivol's better. I mean, of course, those are the top of the class right now.
I think he would agree with that. I mean, he's like, I wouldn't say it, but he knows he's not ready for those guys yet.
So that was the card over in the UK. Supposed to be bigger with Morrell and Callum Smith, and I heard that Smith isn't coming back anytime soon.
I heard that too. That's a shame, man.
Like, what the heck? Was it bicep?
I was, from what I heard from some reports, it sounded more like rib. But no one said that. Bicep. I'm just surmising.
When I think of Callum Smith, I think of bicep. Because remember when
Canelo punched his shoulder off? Yeah, I think he did tear his bicep and had to get surgery.
Prime Canelo just beat his bicep mercifully,
dude. That version of Canelo when he was on that run, oof, That I miss that Canelo, man. That Canelo was fun. The one who was beating up Billy Joe Saunders, the one who was ripping up Callum Smith. He was just crushing Brits left and right.
He fought like four times in 1 year. Coming off of COVID, we were dying for boxing, and he came in there. In theory, I mean, actually, those are aging pretty good. This Callum Smith fight aged pretty good for Canelo.
Absolutely. That was a huge win. And listen, when they were announcing that fight, I was like, that's a really tough fight for Canelo. And I think if Callum actually showed up, because he really didn't show up that night, I think he could have given Canelo hell. But again, that version of Canelo, that guy was a absolute monster. And I was at a bunch of those fights. I was at the Miami fight when he blew out Yildirim. I was at the BJ Saunders fight in Dallas. That was ridiculous. That was awesome. There was 80,000 people there. It was insane. He's waving the crowd on as he's walking.
That's prime. That's where he peaked.
He 100% peaked there. I wasn't at the Callum fight. I was watching that one from home, but I was very surprised in the way that turned out. I was actually going to put some money on Callum. I was like, I could see how Callum go in this fight.
It's amazing how fast they your peak is, and then it's just – for Canelo, he's been around forever. But like that to where he is now, where I saw like a meme. It was like a dog at the beach, an old dog, and he was like trying to like dig sand, and he was going really slow, the dog, like really slow. And then someone quote tweeted and said, Canelo trying to continue his boxing career.
Oof.
And I was like, wow.
Brutal. Brutal.
Right to the Canelo's washed jokes and like Canelo's done, which, you know, skull into Crawford and then not seeing him for a while. I mean, he's not fighting this May. He's fighting in September. So we're not going to see Canelo for a while. He is sparring. And I saw that he is training, which is great. But he's clearly, he's in just like collect a check.
He's in the twilight. He's in the twilight.
Twilight.
Which we see a lot of Mexican fighters do. Chavez Sr. for forever, you know, kept fighting, well past his prime. Because it's just such a love from the Mexican fan base, and there's still money to be made. So I think Canelo's entering that stage of his long and illustrious career.
Do we think it's mobility in September?
It's funny, as you're talking, I was going to ask you the same thing. I'm like, that's a really tough fight. A comeback fight against Mbili, that's a really, really tough. I would be extremely impressed if Canelo comes back off a long layoff, off an injury. He had an elbow surgery, right?
He's got that point where he has to fight big names. He's getting paid an exorbitant amount from Saudi. They want him to fight over there. Like, you can't do a tune-up if you're Canelo Alvarez at this point. You have to go right into a quote-unquote tough fight.
I think Canelo can do whatever he wants. I think if he really wanted a tune-up, they would give him one. I mean, that's but like
if you want the tune-up, if he's gonna fight in September, right? I mean, he can't. That's like April.
He can't do anything small. June, July. Everything's huge.
He can't do anything like in the next 3 months.
No.
So that's what I mean. He's gotten to the point where he's so big and he's such a name, and now he's got this crazy contract that he has to satisfy. It's like, all right, you're getting September's when you're fighting, and you're fighting in Billy. That's one thing about Turkey that we like is that, you know,
you got to fight.
He's going to pay you a shit ton, but he's going to give you like these names, and it's not going to be Shiraz. That's way too much of a test right now. It's going to be in Billy, who's, you know, going to come forward and doesn't have the best defensive skills.
But I think Turkey is going to push Shiraz and Canelo down the line. I think that's part of
it. Might be Canelo's last fight.
Yeah, I think that's what the idea is for Turkey and the timeline of this deal.
That would be nuts. That could be a real ugly scene.
I think we're going to
late 2027.
If we get in Billy in September, I think we're going to get the winner of Jaime Munguia and Resendiz in May for all Mexico versus Mexico. Big one, and then maybe the following September we get a big Shiraz Canelo, but I don't know.
Canelo should fight in Billy, then Jake Paul, and call it a career.
I wouldn't mind the Munguia. I don't want to see Munguia again, but I wouldn't mind the Resendiz fight
versus Canelo.
Yeah, and then go with Jake Paul. I don't think we're going to see Shiraz and Canelo. We might see a big push from Turkey, but I don't think we're going to see that fight.
Jake is looking, he's huge now.
He's a big dude. I've been telling everybody, he's a big dude, and
he's back in the gym. He's walking around like 220, 230 right now.
Yeah, I mean that's what he's been weighing. So he looked good. He still looked like he was in shape, even after the, you know, the jaw surgery. But
let's talk about MVP. Friday night, I was at Madison Square Garden, super late night, ESPN, back into the boxing world. Christina Puncher, our friend Corey Erdman on the call, and some others as well. Alicia Baumgartner defeats Bomi Re-Shin in a very entertaining fight. Baumgartner threw over 700 punches. She landed over 280 shots in that fight. It was a very offensive-minded fight. 10 three-minute rounds. So she did have extra time to work. But it wasn't like, 10 two-minute rounds or 12 threes. Like 280 punches landed in 30 minutes is some high-level offensive stuff from Baumgartner. She gets the win. Pretty wide scorecards. Shin was tough. Oh, my
tough
God.
Tough as nails.
So many so shots. Tough. Just came forward, and we knew that was going to be the case in this fight with Shin coming forward. Baumgartner just showed that she is levels and class above, and from the same kind of chapter as Whitaker. It's like, all right, let's see her go up against some of the best. But I like this performance from Baumgartner. Early locked in and was picking up a lot of what she was doing, and I thought she looked pretty good in this fight.
She's one of the best females in the world, Baumgartner. She
is somehow not ranked in the ring top 10.
Makes no sense, but she has a really clear understanding of how to box. Like, she understands range really well. She has very respectable power, and she knows how to utilize it as well. You see a lot of like the East Coast style in her. She's very athletic. She's explosive. She saves and waits and waits and waits, and then lets her hands go. She has had problems in the past with endurance. That seems to be solved now. She threw a ton of punches in this 10 rounder, and they were 3 minute rounds. And she had someone in front of her. I think this was a good test for Baumgartner, because the things that have given her trouble in the past, Shin would have been able to capitalize on, and she wasn't. So the improvements are there for Baumgartner. She's still improving. She's getting better. But man, I really like Shin. She is super tough. Great chin. Brings it up. Brings it the entire time. I think she got a performance bonus that night, didn't she?
Yeah, she did.
So she was recognized for what she did in there, and I think that's really cool. And I love that about MVP, is that they're really paying attention to what's going on out there and rewarding people who deserve it. She definitely deserves it. So tough, man, because Baumgartner can punch too. She's getting hit with 280 power shots by someone who can really crack, and Shin never really hurt, never deterred, never stopped trying to win. But yeah, it was good, entertaining scrap.
It was very entertaining. So was the co-main event. Lonnie Daniels upset.
That was surprisingly entertaining. I didn't expect that at all.
Yeah, we'll get to that in a second. But yeah, but Baumgartner is a lightning rod. I was with her all week. She knows how to sell a fight. And Jake said something in the afterwards. She promoted all week long, which takes a toll on you. You know about this, Chris.
Yes.
Promoting a Pacquiao fight and traveling all over the place and all these media obligations, and everyone's there to see you. I'm not saying making any excuses, but it does weigh and does tax on a fighter. And for her to come out and have a performance like that and under the bright lights in New York City and be able to land close to 300 punches, that's pretty impressive stuff. Shin is awesome. I got to talk with her a little bit. She's just
it's good to hear.
Someone that you just root for and hopefully she comes back, because she fought Caroline Dubois really tough, and now she fought Baumgartner really tough. And that's the question with Baumgartner. That's what I was getting at. It's like she's in your face, and she's a heel now. Like, she understands that. I think she's trying for that. And everyone's like, afterwards, all week long, we're talking about Caroline Dubois. When are you going to fight Caroline Dubois? And she's like, Caroline Dubois, I'm looking for piranhas. And Caroline Dubois's a guppy. That was one of the lines from Alicia Baumgartner. Or like, Caroline Dubois is not at my level. I'm looking for Serrano. I'm looking for Katie Taylor. Looking for big money fights, which you can kind of, dissect that a little bit and be like, is it really that much difference of the pay? It's not like women's boxing's got tremendously, the highest of the highs, or there's not much of a gap between the Serrano and Taylors and fighting a Caroline Dubois. And then you're fighting someone that in Shin, who Dubois already beat, but you, Baumgartner, said that your level's above Dubois. Because I don't know what's next for Baumgartner. Like, in the ring, she's talking about Katie Taylor. I highly doubt Katie Taylor's last fight in Ireland is going to be against Alicia Baumgartner, who's had now fought 130 pounds, where Taylor's at 140. Like, I don't think MVP wants Baumgartner versus Serrano. That's another name that Baumgartner's throwing out there. I haven't seen Serrano acknowledge it. I haven't seen MVP really push it.
Yeah,
MVP's pushing.
It's interesting because Baumgartner is chasing Serrano Dubois is chasing Bumgarner, and the ones being chased are not even getting, acknowledging who's chasing them. It's interesting how the female dynamic shows up even in fight sports. But she's got to fight Caroline Dubois. She's got that's the fight.
Bumgarner Dubois. Next. There's bad blood. They're on the same level, I believe.
I do
this
too.
This is not a knock.
I think Caroline Dubois is very good. I really rate her.
This is not a knock on Bumgarner. Like, yeah, she's been around longer than Dubois, and she's had some high-profile wins, you know, Michaela Mayer and Terry Harper, but hasn't really lit it up since then, Bumgarner. She's had great performances, and she's fought on a huge stage. She's fought on the Netflix card. Now she's won MVP headlining. But, you know, it's been a while since that Michaela Mayer split. That was the razor thin. One of the most closest decisions you can get in boxing was that Bumgarner win over Mayer. That could easily have been a loss. And then she has got multiple losses on her ledger. Not to mention all the other stuff, the suspensions and sitting out and all that. So it's not like Dubois is like not deserving of this fight. And they're assigned to the same promoter. The bad blood. It's just like Bumgarner doesn't, for some, I noticed this with the female fighting. There's just way more emotions and there's way more grudges. And
yes. Like, it's always grudges. It's always grudges.
Lack of respect is insane.
Yeah. Yeah, that's very, very true. And I don't know if it's like, I don't know if it's the old punch in the face scenario kind of thing where it's like men won't, but you see that in real life too. Like men try to avoid fights, whereas a lot of times, sometimes women will get catty and start fights because it's just not as dangerous. Like, you know, when girls, when women fight in the public, it's, you know, some hair pulling, it's uncomfortable. Like people get thrown around. When guys fight, like, people get knocked out. Some people die. Like it's a much higher risk. But these are women who know how to fight. It's like they know how to punch. So even them not showing respect to each other is pretty wild. Because yeah, they can punch you in the face. Like they can hurt you.
There's more jealousy. I think there's a lot more jealousy in the female ranks of boxing. Like for some reason they don't think like there could be two of the same. Like Shields is now going at it with Bumgarner. I remember them being friends, and it gets like crazily personal. And with Bumgarner, she just won't even acknowledge that Dubois is a good fighter. It's like, I'm surprised that Bumgarner is like, listen, Dubois is a great champion. One day we will face off, but it's not what I want right now. No, she's just completely dismissing her at all times. Like, won't even give her any shred of credibility.
Which I think is so silly because you can build that into a really big fight. That's a big fight. That's a really big fight. And I think it'll really sell too. Like, so she's missing an opportunity. You mentioned how she's playing the heel in order to get more attention. But hey, you've got a perfect foil. And Dubois, I like the way Dubois handles herself when she's talking trash. Like she's good at it too.
She went off too. She's not innocent here either. She went really deep on Bumgarner after.
I love it.
Like personal, like just throwing out just name calling.
Yeah, I mean, but you know, she fights with bad intentions too. Like she talks with bad intentions, she fights with bad intentions. They both do. I think it's a no brainer. That is the next fight, and I think they can build it up into a really huge event.
Yeah, the fact that maybe you know you got Bumgarner at 130 and Dubois at 135. That's one potential roadblock.
I just noticed
never
that.
Really
yeah,
seen that become a roadblock in women's boxing. You know, Michaela Mayer is like willing to fight anyone from 140 to 160. Like there's not that many opportunities in this sport of women's side of things where the weight.
She's trying to fight Clarissa Shields. Michaela Mayer is trying to fight Clarissa Shields. Like legitimately trying to fight her. Like that's
you're
awesome.
Hungry enough. Like women's boxing, there's way more of, we see way more of that weight jumping and them willing.
Terry Harper, so, she lost at 130 to Bumgarner and then won a title at 150 and then came back down to 135. Like she's been all over the map. Yeah. So women, you can see that much more often.
Yeah, so 5 pounds, I don't think that's a big problem. And I do think MVP will make that fight. I do think Nikisa Badarian wants that Dubois-Bumgarner fight. Like, he hasn't come out and said much either. And, you know, like I said before, Katie Taylor's got one more fight in her, and she wants to do it in Ireland. You know, Croke Park they're looking at. No, Croke Park they're looking at. And
Croaky.
I said Croaky. Yeah,
the Irish listeners are gonna burn your house down now.
Crikey Park. Croke Park. It's got that E on the end of it. Not gonna be Taylor. I would be shocked to see Bumgarner or Katie Taylor.
I don't think so either. I mean, nah. I think Katie's gonna get a proper send off. I don't think right. Bumgarner's the right fight.
Bumgarner Serrano, I'm not opposed to that at all.
Me either. Especially at 130, because Amanda is you know, she fought Katie Taylor at 140, all those fights, so, or 135, one, between 135, one, or were they all 140? Regardless.
First fight was at, I think they were all at, no.
I think they're all at 40.
The last fight was at, the second and third were at 140.
Yeah.
I don't know, I don't remember the
first. Regardless, she's not a 40-pounder, so, like, her fighting Baumgartner at 30, I'm into that. I like that. And she's also been fighting in three-minute rounds, so she understands that. Unfortunately, we mentioned Michaela Mayer. Unfortunately, she's moved up so many weight classes, we could never get that rematch. Because I think that fight deserves a rematch at 3 minutes. I think those two at 3 minutes, because we can actually get some separation. But again, that's a fight that's never going to happen.
Mayer really boiled down for that fight, because I've been around both of them. Like, Baumgartner is tiny. Like, I have a picture up on my story right now, like, of interviewing Baumgartner. She is tiny.
Yeah, Michaela's like my size. Michaela
is freaking big.
I was always so surprised when she was fighting at 30. I was like, what the hell? She's super tall. She's a legit 5'9". And yeah, she's not like a super thin girl either. So, like, when she was boiling, like you said, boiling down to 130, she's way better as she's gone up. Her at 47 and in the 50s, I think she's a much better version of herself.
Lonnie Daniels in the co-main event upset Shadeja Green. Shadeja was like a minus 1600 favorite in this one. Massive, massive upset. Shadeja had a pretty bad weight cut, I think, because she was not herself. Was getting hit with a lot of shots early. Daniels is very aggressive type of fighter. Throws these winging shots. And then late second half of the fight, Green kind of slumps over in her corner and the ref waves it off. Then it got really scary where she basically collapsed and for lack of a better term, just shut off. Gets taken out on a stretcher. Really, really scary scene afterwards, to the point where Lonnie Daniels was brought to tears. And you see, it was just like the range of emotions were wild, and why boxing is unlike any other sport. And when, like they say, you don't play boxing, because Lonnie Daniels wins the fight. She's jumping up and down. Her team is going crazy. She just got the biggest win of her life. And then you look over and you see Green. And then you see that she's in trouble, and you can't even celebrate. Like, it was a somber post-fight interview with Ariel Helwani and Lonnie. I caught her backstage. They were trying to do something with her on camera, and she just didn't want to do it. She just wanted to make sure that Shadeja was okay. Luckily, thankfully, Shadeja's fine and recovering, and she came to in her locker and went to the hospital, and everything checked out there. But that was some wild scenes that shows you that boxing it ain't like any other sport out there.
No, it's a super dangerous sport. We see this much more often with the men than the females. It's pretty rare to see these types of incidences happen with female fighters. But these are bigger ladies, and it's weird because Green is the puncher, right? She's the one with 11 KOs and her 16 wins. And that's not the case for Lonnie. Lonnie Daniels, she's had one KO. But it doesn't matter.
Did you watch Lonnie versus Shields?
I did. Yeah.
She basically ran the entire she fought way different against Green than she did against Shields.
Yeah, she came right at Shadeja. But you have to that's the way you have to fight Shadeja. You have to go right at her. You can't stay on the outside with her because she's long and big and she's strong. You gotta fight her from the outside. But Lonnie Daniels, not a puncher, but that should show everyone listening and people who watch the sport, like, it doesn't matter. You're still fighting a professional fighter who knows how to punch. Even if you're not a knockout puncher, you're still getting damaged. Your brain is still getting rattled. But the performance by Shadeja, you mentioned possible bad weight cut. Maybe, but she just did not look switched on. She didn't look like she wanted to be there. She looked
weird.
Everything was slow moving. And she's a very good fighter. And she just did not. That was not the same person I've seen in the past.
All week long, she's not one to do interviews and she's not one to talk a lot. But she was, like, especially just non-committal to talk. She gave us interviews, but there wasn't much there.
Yeah.
And you don't look too much into that. I'm just like, oh, it's just another fighter that's probably trying to make weight and just ornery and doesn't want to talk to me and doesn't want to talk to anyone. But, yeah, that was a tough scene for Shadeja, who should be able to bounce back. But Lonnie, talking to her all week, this was the happiest boxer I've ever seen on a fight week.
Isn't that her name? Like, isn't
the Smiling Assassin.
Smiling Assassin.
For her. Because she didn't stop smiling once. Just taking pictures of everything, asking everyone for autographs. She got autographs of everyone. I didn't even know autographs were still a thing. And she was getting autographs. Like, she's like, is that Jake Paul? She's like, do you think I can get his autograph? I was like, yeah, probably. You're on the card. I was like, you're fighting on his card or in the co-main event. Like, yeah. And her whole family was there. Just like happy-go-lucky vibe. And sometimes when you see that in the sport, it's like, are they just happy to be here? Or are they actually trying to win? Like, is she trying to go in there and upset Shadeza Green? Or is she just like, hey, I'm on ESPN. I'm all the way from New Zealand.
Did you get your answer, Dan?
She came to win.
She was there to win. She's a
unified champ at 168. Got the ring belt, and she's got a majority of the belts besides Franchon Cruz de Zern has the other belt. It was a wild scene. And well, you know, she's talking with her. And,
she's a Kiwi. Yeah. She's a Kiwi. Yeah. New Zealanders. I love those people. They're all happy warriors. They're a warrior culture for sure, but they're like, they're such fun, nice, happy people. You know, Joe Parker is hilarious. He's like such a good dude. But you know, these guys can fight. This is part of their culture. So even though you see her smiling and bopping around, when it's time to fight, it's in her blood.
Yeah, it was a wild scene, and her talking to her and hearing her story like doesn't come from anything. In New Zealand, like they have, like our family doesn't have much of like any funds or any really. She came from nothing, and now she's got majority of the belts at 168. And you know, she's maybe going to get a rematch if Shadeja wants to fight on. Could maybe get a rematch with Shields, fight Franchon Cruz de Zern. She can come back on MVP. So that was really cool to see, and we're happy that Shadeja is in good spirits there. What else we got here? Conor Benn signs a 5-fight deal with Zuffa. Least surprising thing ever.
I'm glad you said it. I was gonna say, but like we kind of expected that one.
I saw Keith Connolly at the fight, and he said, "Hey Dan, I saw your tweet because I said we all knew that this wasn't a one fight deal. We were like the chatter in the industry was that this was always going to be a multiple fight deal." And I had to sit there and just like kind of eat it. I was like, "Yeah, I tweeted it, and that's what everyone's saying." And he's like, "I'm telling you, it's not. I'm telling you." He's like, "We only had a one fight deal, and then we were going to revisit." Afterwards and sign a longer one, and that's what Keith told me. I want to get it out there into the world. He's a great manager. I told him, hey buddy, you're killing it. I was like, do you represent media? Because I would like to get signed to Keith Connolly Enterprises, and he said he hasn't gotten to media yet. But least surprising thing ever is Conor Benn with Zuffa. 5-fight deal, 2.5 years in length, which should take him through the majority of his prime because he's 29 now. The Ryan Garcia fight is what they are targeting.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Keith did confirm. He didn't say it's 100% happening, but that's what they're looking at. And all parties seem to want that, both sides. And, you know, there are rungs. We know this, with Zuffa. The Zuffa signings that are going to fight on big Riyadh cards and big ring cards. And then there's the Julian Hammerhand types that are going to fight in the quote unquote league.
Yeah, those are the roster guys. Those are guys that are in the league roster. But no, like the Conor Benns and the Edgar Berlangas, I spoke to him the other day. You know, he's going to be fighting at 68. He's going to be fighting for titles. Like Ben is going to be in that class, that tier, like you said, of the Zuffa deals.
Yeah, so we'll see. You know, the talk was, the theory out there, it's just a theory, allegedly, maybe we're the proper words here, that it was always going to be a multiple fight deal, that the $15 million wasn't for one fight, it was for multiple fights, and it was a way that Matchroom wasn't going to be able to match that type of offer. That was
by coupling it and driving the price up. Yeah,
right. I mean, I might have been like a lawyer, and I might have been someone that's been in negotiations.
Yeah, because if the fight was a $5 million fight, Matchroom would have matched that,
of course.
But a $15 million fight,
I think they were $15 million for one fight.
Yeah. That never really made sense.
We'll see. I don't want to see any more litigation in this sport. I never root for litigation, but I do sit back and watch this Eddie Hearn, Dana White saga as someone that has zero skin in the game. Like they're not coming after us. They're not suing us. We're just watching it and reacting to it. So Eddie, as we know, it's like he signs Tom Aspinall to his management company. They're going tit for tat here. And we wanted to see how this cookie would crumble here with Conor Benn. Is he really a free agent? Is he now going to go out there and maybe re-sign with Matchroom or go to the top rank? No, he's with Zuffa now. So Eddie says that, you know, they're going to be hearing from all lawyers, or there's going to be like, or would you be shocked if Eddie announces on one of his million interviews that he does in the next couple of weeks, oh yeah, we've opened up some type of litigation or we opened up some type of investigation?
Not at all.
Into this?
Not at all.
Care?
And so this got brought up a few weeks ago. We talked about it on ProBox, but we actually it was written on Boxing Scene, and we talked about it. But apparently, it was not true that Eddie had filed something against Conor Benn. And then I ended up speaking to Keith Connolly. He called me like literally because we do the live shows. He called me like almost immediately, and he's like that's not true. He's like there's no pending legal going on between Eddie and Conor and our side. So he's like I didn't know. He's like I reached out to the lawyer, and the lawyer was like no, there's nothing going on. So but it could happen.
Keith, I like how he's operating. I told him this right to his face, and I said this on the show. It's like, you know, Eddie's very emotional. And Eddie does all his interviews, and he's going to, you know, talk about Conor Benn was like this to me. I bought him a car, and how can he do this? And then I like Keith's responses. It's like if I can get a fighter 300 times more, or whatever the number was, I'm going to do that, and that's the end of it. Like nothing personal. He didn't say anything bad about Eddie because Eddie has said I will no longer work with Keith Connolly, which I don't think is 100% true. But I do like the fact that he's like, if you're a fighter, because that's all he has to please, Connolly. He doesn't have to please the public like Eddie does. He just has to make sure his fighter gets the most amount of money possible.
And you would think that would be the standard, right, for managers? Like, that's how they operate. They're working for the fighter. Their job is to do the best for the fighter. But it's not the case. What happens most of the time, the manager's careers are longer than the fighter's careers. So the managers get in with the promoters, and they actually work more with the promoters than they do their own guys. It's a really backhanded, sneaky way and slimy way to operate them. But we've seen it over the years, time and time and time again with managers and the way that they take advantage of situations, and they're really in the ear of the promoter, getting the best deal worked out, making it look like they're only helping their fighter. Keith literally is there for the fighter, and he doesn't care what kind of bridge quote unquote gets burned, because he's going to be one of those guys where Keith is like, I have the guy that you want. I'm too good to deny, or my guys are too good to deny, and you got to deal with me. And I think that's the way it's supposed to be. It's surprising that more guys don't do that, but Keith has been able to operate in a way that he's been able to really, really look out for his fighters more than anything.
You remember Danny? He had Danny Jacobs early on.
Did great deals for Danny. He had me at the end of my career.
He got Jacobs $10 million for Canelo.
Yeah, which is wild. He worked with me my last couple of fights, and he always said, he's like, God, I wish I had you in your peak. He's like, we would have made 10 times more money. I'm like, yeah, well, it is what it is. But we made really good money together, even though we didn't have that many fights, and it was very end of my career. And I was 36 years old, 37 years old, still fighting on big cards and still making good paydays.
Makes him so, like, I don't know much about it. I just hear about the end. I hear about the when the deal is finalized. Like, how has he been able to become such a good manager?
Well, it's exactly like you said. There's no emotion in it. He's aggressive for one, and he goes after what he wants, and he's always willing to walk away from the table. And it's negotiating 101. Like it's the art of the deal type stuff. Like it's just like, yeah, you have leverage, you use it. If you don't, you know, you're playing poker, and you got to be careful what you say and what you do. And when it's time to fold, he just has very good instincts when it comes to dealing with people. But again, he is very aggressive. He does take risks, but for the most part, they're calculated.
Love that. That's really it for this episode. Next weekend, we got Jarrell Miller stepping back to the ring. Yes. Is he another Keith Connolly guy, too?
No.
Okay, I thought he was.
No.
Brooklyn guy. You guys are all kind of sticking to Long Island, Brooklyn, New York.
Adam Konaski was a Keith Connolly guy.
And he got some good paydays
as
well.
Yes, he did. Yes, he did.
And he has Bumgarner.
Yes.
And that's
first. That's his first email.
Yeah, that was pretty cool. And then I saw Hitchens was in the crowd on Friday night. Lil Kim was there. Didn't recognize her.
Yeah. Aging
superstars. Remember Lil Kim?
Aging superstars tend to.
Dude, remember Lil Kim in like the late 90s? I remember her being like 13 years old. She came out with the boob out at the VMAs. I was like 13. Like, wow. Opened my eyes. But to see what she looks like now. See what she looks like now. Tough.
Aging pop stars. Madonna.
She still got like the when they said look like I didn't know that she was gonna walk Bumgarner out. I had no clue. So when
that's pretty cool though.
Cody Big Mo said accompanied by Lil Kim. Like I was like, whoa. The whole crowd got up and was like, she still has that name in New York.
Oh yeah, she's absolutely.
OG female rapper. You know, her and Biggie
And listen, boxing fans tend to be
hip-hop fans.
Not even just that. Like, but it's an older crowd. It's not like super young kids who are not going to know who Little Kim is. It's guys like us. It's people our age and older, where Little Kim was at the height of her powers. So she's still a big deal in around New York City and amongst boxing circles because of the age. I'm looking at pictures of her on Google right now. Wow. What a difference. the main headline I'm reading right now. VMAs, what happened? Bro. What happened to Little Kim?
Was it 2000 or the 99 VMAs? She came out with the boob out.
That was with that purple dress, right? Am I?
Yeah, you just things you just don't forget seared into your brain.
Yeah.
Like Britney Spears with the snake. And then Little Kim with the boob.
Yep. Yeah, that light purple dress. There it is. Man,
it is.
She was something else, man. Woof.
Algeria's Googling Lil' Kim on the search engine. That's when you know it's time to end the episode. All right, everyone. Have a great week. We'll be back on Thursday to preview more and talk about more faded pop stars. Enjoy your week. Keep your hands up at all times. Protect yourselves at all times. Stay Adler's DMs. We're out.